SiriusXM Sports presents At the Races with Steve Bick. Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
A very good Monday. Race fans, Sirius 219, XM 201, Sports Zone 964, if you're listening to Sirius XM online, and at our website, stevebick.com. A lovely Monday, and they're racing at Del Mar today, continuing a very good weekend. And it feels like I just turned away from the nightcap. At Del Mar, late night, it reminders of old Hollywood action. Friday nights under the lights at Hollywood. Yeah, I was waiting around last night to watch the Eddie Reed. And actually, Tina and I were sitting in the. We've got this little backyard thing, this little patio thing that Tina made had. Stamped concrete kind of thing, and we got a little fire pit, like a little cauldron thing, and so we tried it last night, and it was really nice. We were sitting out there, and I got the laptop and waiting for the Eddie Reed, and once the race went, I'm looking at the results and looking at the numbers. And I realized, oh my God, they're not even close to done here. They're going to keep going. In fact, I think the two more after that, two or three more. I don't know. I think we were actually heading to bed by the time they were going postward for the 11th, at Del Mar last night. Well, they come back today, and one place that you don't get to enjoy today, Colonial. They're getting out in front of the heat, and unfortunately, they've had to cancel opening day. And of course, you know, they already, it's hot down there under the best of circumstances, and they run, you know, 5:30 first post. Well, for the flats, the two hurdle races were scheduled for 4:00 and 4:40. But you know, they run late afternoon into the evening for a reason. I mean, number one, they've got a great lighting system, and but it's because it's so hot there anyway, let alone with a heat wave coming. It's supposed to be a very, very warm week. So Colonial day one is on hold, and we'll see where they go and how much this works its way up the coast too, and who else it might affect. We've already had, you know, it was last Monday, right? We had Delaware and Philly. And so, in fact, Philly is making up races from that cancellation. They've got an 11 or 12 race card today. I think 12. And then, yeah, 12 and 12 the next 2 days. And the card tomorrow, by the way, for those that don't normally look at parks, there's a really good card tomorrow. At Parks, with I think six allowances, a couple of Pennsylvania bred allowances and open company allowances, starter allowance, nice size fields, 8, 8, 9, 9, 9, 7. Nightcap is a maiden 10 with 12. Some nice racing. There's some good racing again. It's been amazing. The transformation of Monday, Tuesday, and of course Wednesday, Thursday, you know, starts to add in New York and so forth. But you know, with Indiana Grand and Canterbury, you know, leading the charge, and then a day like today where Del Mar is going to be available to you, so we'll incorporate it into the conversation. Let's get into some of the weekend and I guess, I guess the big story, got to lead with the big story, right? The big story has to be maximum security. And the win in the San Diego, which was really exciting. I mean, the race, just, you know, take away all the extraneous. It was a interesting race from a strategic standpoint. And, you know, so that makes it a, you know, a good discussion point. The aggressive tactics involving midcourt and Victor Espinoza, John Sheriff's, you know, wasn't going to allow, and higher power too, ended up, you know, not really involving, being involved in the ultimate outcome. But there was clearly intent to take the race to the favorite. And maximum security, make no mistake about this, maximum security had a million reasons to lose that race. It absolutely had his preferred style taken from him. You know, surrounded on the backstretch and, you know, not given the ability to get that free run, you know, that he obviously, you know, thrives with. And, you know, Cedillo, I see the carrying on. Somebody looking to you know, indict Abel Cedillo. Oh, they can't possibly, can't use that, or can't use him again. Oh, they have to get rid of him. He doesn't know. What was he doing out there? What was he doing? What was he supposed to do? What was he supposed to do? You know, you're inside, higher power got out. Midcourt absolutely hell-bent to get the lead. And, you know, then you're pocketed for, you know, a good portion. And then when the horse is produced, he runs down midcourt and decisions him. What exactly? Oh, he didn't look like, he didn't look the same. What are you talking about? And there was also the very real and well suggested portion of this that, you know, going down to Del Mar is not always the easiest assignment for, you know, for anybody that hasn't been over it. And Baffert came back. Baffert seemed thrilled. He seemed thrilled, and you would expect that, you know, horse off, what, 5 months, 4.5 months? Here, I'll tell you exactly. I'll tell you how many days. 147 days. I don't know. I thought both he and midcourt ran great. Figure came back, you know, solid, 101 buyer, you know, not spectacular, not embarrassing. I mean, I thought that was okay. And you would think it sets up for a very good confrontation in the Pacific Classic. And of course, also, we should mention too, that's another part of this. He had only run, I'm curious. Yeah, when he got beaten the Pegasus. That's interesting. How about that? Maximum Security's, let's see, he's 9 for 11. But that loss in the Pegasus last year at Monmouth, that was at a mile and a 16th. So, anyway, I thought he ran very, very credibly. And a lot to move forward off of that. And for midcourt, I'm curious. Let's go, because, of course, midcourt, the race was over for him in the Hollywood Gold Cup early, but that's a very the 101 buyer, that's a pretty typical mid-court effort. Higher Power, a little bit of a disappointment in here, really, that he kind of fell back, and you could see that he wasn't going to go on with the two leaders. So I thought it was a very nice feature toward the end of Saturday. Of course, early in Saturday, you had as arguably as big a star as there is anywhere, Enable. And she won that race. She won that race with complete authority and disdain, and including Frankie Dettori looking back at Japan. It was, that was like a goodbye Charlie moment. So long, Charlie. So long, Ryan. That was a good way to start the day. And then in between, of course, there were a lot of nice performances. And here at Saratoga, we'll talk to Steve Asmussen in about 15 minutes. And it's going to be funny because Volatile's grade one victory in the Vanderbilt, where there was a lack of aggressive riding, no, the exact opposite went on in the Vanderbilt, where Volatile, you know, took command in a couple of jumps, and you know, nobody was seemed that interested in taking the race to him. I mean, this is one of the frustrations. I'll talk to Richie about this. Rich Migliore is joining us at 10, and it's a good topic for Rich. You know, it's one of the frustrations of these smaller field stakes is that you're not getting true reads because there isn't enough variety of style and, you know, variety of pace pressing and speeds and stalkers. You know, there just isn't. You need, you know, a quorum, and so it sets up potential. So, you know, this is a nice win, and it, you know, certainly, there's no need to, you know, glorify it above what it was, and it's a, you know, good performance. Clearly, Volatile probably, you know, regressing off the unbelievable effort at Churchill, but, you know, still more than enough. And Moquette and Whitmore's just plucky. So we'll talk to Steve Asmussen about Volatile, but the first order of business with Steve Asmussen has got nothing to do with the horses under his care. It more has to do with the family and you know, those that he cares most about, specifically son Keith last night at Lone Star, wins the nightcap and setting off a joyous family celebration for the Asmussens, and took him. It came very close, actually. I think he'd had 4 seconds coming in 16. This was his 16th or 17th, I think. His 17th mount, and becomes the latest Asmussen in the annals of riders. For those that use Equibase, pull up the jockey statistics and put in Asmussen. There's, I think, 7, maybe 8. And Keith, I did see a funny comment on Twitter where somebody wrote to him, "Well, now you can go back to college." But I think you know, the way things are, we're not sure if he's got a, you know, he's got a report in the fall or how that's going to work. But we're going to talk to Steve, and actually it was a good week for the Asmussen barn overall. I had mentioned those wins at Lone Star in the Texas Stallion and under that state card where the Asmussen barn sent out 3 of the 4 stake winners with Stewie Elliott and Mr. Farish. So look forward to talking to Steve. The other win from Saturday that we're going to discuss in this first hour before Mick joins us, Kevin Attard's going to join us. And yeah, the most mild of you can't really call Starship Jubilee's win in the Boston Spa. You can't call it an upset per se, really. You know, she had several advantages going into this, obviously, over Sister Charlie. I mean, Sister Charlie's coming off the layoff. It's not her distance. You know, there were plenty of reasons to want to be against Sister Charlie in the Boston Spa, and she ran fine. You know, very average splits laid out, and you know the other Chad Brown, Peter Brandt runner, North Broadway. You know, tried to do a setting up a kind of the rabbity concept, but you know, frankly, Sister Charlie doesn't need that. But in the meantime, Starship Jubilee was sitting very comfortably. And Javier Castellano, when he said go, I mean, she pounced, absolutely pounced. And Call Me Love, who, that's a nice performance by Call Me Love. I mean, and the Clement Barn continues to be just unconscious. Everything that's coming out of that Clement Barn, holy cow. That was a nice step forward. And then she gets another graded stake placement, Call Me Love. And Sister Charlie checks in third, but we'll build off that. You know, just nothing wrong with, you know, starting your 6-year-old season, you know, with a good effort at a distance that isn't really to, you know, her regular approach. But in the meantime, the 7-year-old Starship Jubilee, I mean, this is one of the great claims of all time. There's no, how do you argue that? And the first graded stake win in New York for Kevin Attard, and the 8th overall for Starship Jubilee. And Kevin had a mammoth week. I think he won three races Saturday at Woodbine in addition to this, and I saw a nice horse of his Thursday or Friday that won, I want to ask about, that actually Donato Lanny owns, that he bought. And the Attard's actually with some other nice performers. How about that Red Hierarchy for Jamie Attard that won the nightcap at Woodbine? That was the you know, the fourth leg of the cross country. That's a nice horse for Norseman. Was it Harold Walton? And Signature Red was a very nice horse of this ilk. But this is actually a horse that Walton, it's a homebred of his, Red Hierarchy. So we'll go north of the border, and there's actually quite a bit of Woodbine action to discuss, because Cheryl Spite came back, is 2-for-2. There's a whole bunch of horses right now. It's pretty interesting. There's a number of horses like this that are, you know, lightly raced, and of course we've got kind of a spotlight on this given the Derby situation. You know, not that Spite Cheryl is going to be rushed, you know, to Derby, but and for those that keep bringing up the Queen's Plate, he's not going to be rushed to the Queen's Plate either, because he's not Ontario sired. he's a Spite Stout, and he's a Kentucky bred. But 2-for-2, and the way he did it, if you haven't seen that performance in the Marine, I'm going to try to get a hold of it. Roger's been tough to reach, Roger Rathbun. He's got like four or five numbers. We're always tough to chase down Roger Atfield. But that was a big performance, and it'll be interesting to see. I mean, he's among the best 3-year-olds, it seems. You know, figs are seemingly, you know, just okay, but that's a very nice horse. And certainly when we talk to Sid on Wednesday, I'm sure he'll have talked to Mr. Fipke by then, and you know, maybe there's a feel for what's next down the road for Sherrill's Spite. But wins the Marine in the easiest fashion. And also from Saturday at Woodbine in the Celine, 260 wires under Emma Jane Wilson for Cassie and Barber. And it was a tremendous Saturday for Gary Barber, who, in addition to 260 winning the Celine, then later Laura's Light won the San Clemente in those familiar pink silks with the black B, the stylized black B. So congratulations to Gary. And he actually, there was also a placement too. I think he was, I'm going to forget what it was, but I think he was second in another stake. So many good performances to discuss. Speaking of horses that are two for two, how about yesterday in that allowance? Happy Saver. That was interesting. We owe Todd a call. And of course, we got to also mention Mike Maker, who just continues to, it's unbelievable. Some Like It Hot Brown and the Bernard Baruch, and very nice effort. Runs 1-2. I was trying to get Mr. Dumas in. And actually, you know, the 8-to-1s, almost 9-to-1s on the two of them. Hot Brown, that was a little cool on the board, actually, it seemed. I thought would have taken more money. And I thought we were going to get a better price on Mr. Dumas. But anyway, he just continues, Maker, to win with alacrity, as we like to say. So Friday, the quick call, Linda Rice. We got a call into Linda. Maybe we'll talk to her later. Plenty to do. Let's reach for Steve Asmussen, actually, Case. Let's get Steve in, and we'll get started. There you go, Steve A. And as I look down, a bunch of different things. The big contest at Monmouth that we talked to Brian Skirka about, Scotty McKeever. Scotty Pick Six, as he's known, and one of the most respected players out there. He wins the big contest. 26 different prize winners. I think we're going to talk to Scotty on Wednesday. Reached out to him to congratulate him and invite him on for a conversation. And a lot of familiar names on that board. We'll go through some of those. What a great contest. And I know that Brian was thrilled. The 228 entrants took part in the contest, too, on Saturday. I got quite a bit of that. And, yeah, then the rest of it will just weave in as the morning and the next couple of days unfold. Right now, Steve Asmussen joins us, and we're going to congratulate him about a bunch of stake wins, including a grade one. But the first order of business is family business, as son Keith breaks his maiden last night at Lone Star, and the beaming smiles on everybody. Infectious. And Steve, just another part of the industry congratulating you and Keith and Julie and everybody on this great win. The latest Asmussen to pose for a picture on a horse. Good morning and congrats.
Thank you very much. Extremely exciting.
talk about it. It I don't think it took longer than expected or anything, but because he had a handful of seconds and had come close. What's it feel like to you know, you flew to Texas after Volatile's win, so you could be there. So you had a feeling, I think.
Well, he's been consistently doing better, and put it all together yesterday, and extremely gratifying win. Can't tell you how proud, obviously, as a parent, you know, just the discipline for him to get to a acceptable weight and put in all the work for this. But just very, very special moment that horse racing allows you as a family.
Well, and of course, you know, the family from, you know, the riding side, you and your brother, and you know, there's been a steady supply. Your father, I mean, it just, it's one of those special things. I mean,
it's very hard to put on, you know, it's conversations that he has consistently had with his grandfather, with his uncle, and just means a lot to all of us. And it's what horse, you know, it's a great reminder of what horse racing has allowed for us as a family, and we, you know, very extremely grateful.
Have you been at every start?
Yes.
That's what I thought. I thought you had. I thought you'd made the trip to make sure.
Yeah. This win will ease that tension.
Well, and actually, this is a nice horse too. This is a horse that had every intention of being a nice colt in his galère.
He's a great big horse that has a lot of talent, but he is obviously will, for lack of a better term, lay down a bit. You know, he's a great big horse. He isn't sure he wants to give out the effort, and there's more there to give. And I think, you know, this spot should allow for Inna Squire to, you know, rewarded with the win, and I think move forward because I think we just need the big horse's effort.
Well, and this is a Phoenix purchase for real money too, for you know, close to seven figures, and Inna Squire, and how much is Keith going to apply toward, you know, the riding side, Steve? I mean, college, I don't know where things stand for the fall, but
right.
You know,
the pandemic made this possible by the schools going online, and he has a midterm today, so he is. You know, it's very, very unique circumstances right now for everybody. You know, and it's impossible to know when school starts back up in person and where we're at there.
So he'll continue to take calls and you know, go take it as far as he can. I mean,
well,
without
right now the plan is to ride through the end of the Lone Star meet, which finishes on August 12th.
Okay, and then go from there, I guess. Well, it's very cool.
Right. The circumstances of the pandemic, riders not being allowed to go from one track to the other, and all of the above, kind of. Just when this meet ends, and then school, it's just, like I said, the circumstances of, are you going to run tomorrow? I think all of that added up made yesterday so special.
Unbelievable. Out of curiosity, how much, was there a lot of arm twisting with Julie, or was she behind this from word go?
The way that it happened, you know, Keith James went and got on horses for my father at El Primero for several years. Christmas break, spring break, galloped for me in the summers a bit. And then the pandemic allowed him to come over to Oaklawn and start getting more on horses consistently. And that you could started working horses and people asking the questions, and you could tell he was lightening up on his diet and all that. I was thinking, I'm all right. He won't get too talked into this. And then he just wore her out. You know, he just kept at it and showed the dedication that it requires to responsibly get his weight down. And he's put in the work, you know. And the great thing about racing and why it means so much is you got to do it. You got to earn it. If nobody's going to give it to you.
Yep.
And extremely, extremely proud of all the work he's put in to be in this position.
Well, and you can also, I don't know, you know, since last night, and you're not necessarily a Twitter follower, but you got to be touched by, you know, the outpouring of affection and support.
That means so much. And yesterday in person, it being the last race, and watching the reaction of you know, the great Lone Star employees and, you know, the gate crew and the chase truck. And he's a great young man, and a lot of people were very happy for him.
Really a sweet story. Before we come back to Saratoga and talk volatile, I do want to mention, because we watched it during the week, you and Mr. Farish and Stu Elliott taking those three stakes midweek at Lone Star.
Yes, you know, Texas has rebounded nicely with their purses and has given some nice financial opportunity, and especially with the state bred stakes program, and for us to be fortunate enough to have some Farish homebreds to take advantage of that with is very nice, very nice. And for us to have a natural hat trick with three Farish homebreds that were all started at Mom and Dad's in El Primero was a very good midweek bonus.
No doubt, a couple of too much blings and a grasshopper, and the racing's been good. And you said it right at the beginning of the Lone Star meet. There was the, you know, whatever, the 10-day break, but you told everybody when the gates opened to keep an eye on the racing at Lone Star, and it's been excellent. Come back to Saratoga, Steve, and volatile. Obviously. You know, all eyes on him, and you kind of knew what the game plan was. Talk about getting the grade one for this son of violence.
Well, extremely significant. We've seen his brilliance. You mentioned beautiful horse, $850,000 yearling purchase. The patience, Mr. Torrealba, Three Chimneys, Amira Phoenix, just to have everything in line for him to get his grade one victory is extremely significant. Brilliant horse, came out of the race in good shape, and we will sit down and try to map out how to get him to the Breeders' Cup in the best possible condition.
How surprised were you at the way in which, it wasn't a big field, and so in terms of pressure, but you had to be surprised to see how little pressure he faced early?
Well, all the anxious moments were pre-race, and
right.
Obviously the complexion changed with the late scratch, Alexitonian, and then he was away cleanly and took care of business from there, but to come home 22-91 the last quarter of a dirt race,
yeah,
at Saratoga is moving. Yeah,
well,
the three horses in pursuit, all three individually grade one winners and accomplished at Saratoga. So
that's true.
I think that we like I said before, we've seen Volatile's brilliance. Now there's a G1 next to his name, and let's finish off the year right with him.
One more start, you think, before Breeders' Cup?
With how he has responded to the spacing, that is what I expect.
Yeah. So, all right. So maybe we're trying to think. Well, there's...
With the schedule, you know, in a year that the Jim Dandy runs after the Travers, let's see what...
Yeah, exactly. Well, and there's no, I know that there's no Churchill Downs handicap, so I suppose staying at Saratoga and something like the Vosburgh probably, right? Does that make sense?
Well, we just, like I said, he came out of the race in good shape. How he's responding, how he's training, I thought, you know, going into the Vanderbilt, his last work, Scott, I thought, described it best. Looked like they were holding a lion away from meat, and that's how you want him when he's going to walk over there. We'll wait for that feeling again before we run him.
Well, Volatile, and of course, bred by Hillendale, and congratulations to John Sakura and the team. Violence is just on an absolute role, and Volatile a lot to do with it, and this four-year-old heading toward the fall, and a grade one winner Steve, there was also, I should slip in, because I was there last week, and it seems like a minor, you know, looking back at it, but I do want to mention that Arkadust that won the Wolf Hill the other day, and I thought that was a nice performance.
A strong race. You know, Toby doesn't have him up at Belmont. Toby Sheets does. Horse, very sharp, come off the bench, full field, turf sprint, handled well, and came home brilliantly, you know, very fast race, and very exciting, you know, with some nice turf sprint financial opportunities coming up the rest of the year.
Obviously, coming out of the Navarro barn and a chance to, you know, to evaluate, and you mentioned Toby, you know, handling him at Belmont, but this was, you know, this was really... I thought a terrific effort, and he was a Verrazano. Crawford Farms, they new to you, they reached out to you with him?
Yes, absolutely. Wonderful, wonderful people. Truly enjoy their horses, and it was that was our first win for the Crawfords, and hopefully it's first of many, because Archie just came out of it in great shape. Obviously, he needs some spacing for his races. Obviously, he likes to be sharp going into a race, and we'll try to recreate that feeling. But very exciting horse.
Well, the seasons, and of course the, you know, the places where you're operating, you know, the summer meets continue. Let's maybe look ahead a little bit to what is coming up, and we'll start actually, Steve, at Saratoga. A couple of thoughts about speaking of volatile and the success. What's your early impression of the way this main track? I'm asking pretty much everybody. How this main track is playing with the new drainage?
I think it's the most significant positive news horse racing's had since I can remember. Just the way they go over it in the morning, the way they come off of it, the way they walk off of the racetrack from any exercise, small or large, is obvious. And it's, you know, like I said, I think it's the best thing that's happened to horse racing since I can remember.
Nice. Well, and everybody's been giving it, you know, rave reviews. We had Jim Bond on TV.
I think it's the rave reviews are from the horses. Just their state of mind and how they feel walking off of the same racetrack that you've been on for so many years previously. It's that obvious.
Nice. Nice. Well, Steve, a quick hit or two of a couple of horses coming up, and going to go to Indiana, actually. Like asking about unraced maidens, you got a dialed-in Indiana bred for LNN, Miss Inhofe, coming up tomorrow.
Yes, the opportunity to run her 5/8 instead of me waiting until the next Indiana bred being in a couple weeks and all of that is why she's in here. She's a nice Indiana bred. She'll be up against it a bit in an open race.
Fair enough. And later today, actually, Airline Drive at Lone Star.
Well, her owner expects her to win. Yeah, she doesn't.
I love it. You being the owner. And Steve Bankett is going to run in the Morrissey, and he's globetrotted a little bit. Nice to, you know, be able to run him against New York Bred Company.
Yeah, the kind of year that he's had. He runs third in 100 listed at Oaklawn behind two Grade 1 winners. You know, two horses that have won Grade 1 since as well. You know, that he's just had such a tough year. And then the Morrissey's a bit short for him at 7/8 of a mile. I think he's ideal mile and a 16th horse. It is an opportunity for him to run against New York Reds. I had planned on running him in the West Virginia Governors, but with the cancellation of that race, this is plan B. The only other opportunity right now for against New York Reds was on the turf. Obviously, Bankett's been successful on the dirt. I want to keep him on that surface.
Let me also slip in another one, too, a first-time starter coming up at the end of the week at Ellis. Summer Ride. This is a candy ride. And
He's a heavy horse that had some pretty chronic shins that he's going to need a race, I think, giving him a sprint race on the turf. You have some of the stud colts, bigger colts that have been in training for too long. They need a race to get them over the hump from a fitness level. I think giving him a run on the turf is a safe thing to do, but he is meant for the dirt and further distances.
So we'll keep an eye on him. And, of course, Candy Ride out of an Escondorea mare, and seems like he got to keep an eye on this one. He was a $310,000 yearling,
yeah,
Mr. Durant.
He's a very attractive horse that has some talent, but he needs a run. He's been in the barn training for too long.
Well, Steve, a wonderful weekend, a grade one win at Saratoga for Volatile on Saturday, and KJ, Keith James, a winner in the nightcap last night at Lodestar. Congratulations to the clients, to you, the family. The smiles told it all.
So thank you very much. Very, very special moment with horse racing of the Asmussen family. Very grateful.
Steve Asmussen, everybody, and I'll put that picture up. Actually, I retweeted it from last night, Lone Star putting it out, and if you saw Keith's, you saw the press release, and Keith himself acknowledging, you know, being 24 and that Lone Star at 22 years of racing action, and that he just, you know, growing up, that was the racetrack that he frequented the most. And so to get the win there, very special. And if I'm not mistaken, Steve's gone, I think, but I'm pretty sure that Steve's first win came at Manor Downs, where I'll also make the connection to Manor that Pat Cummings, that was the last place, I think, that the last track announcer that Manor had was Pat. You did know that Pat called races, right? Absolutely. In fact, we came down. Maybe I have discussed this with Pat over the years, and I haven't gotten the results yet from Pat, now that I think about it, from Saturday's contest. We got to get the prop contest results, see who won. But we were at Philly. We were running, I'm gonna say, kicking and screaming. And Pat was calling. He was filling in for Keith Jones that week. Keith was on vacation, or I think Keith may have had a surgery or something. I'll ask Pat this we got to get a clarification. Steve Asmussen and Volatile and much, much more. Hope you took a couple of notes there on some horses that seem worth tracking. That Summer Ride is cut out to be a nice horse, but it sounds like it's going to take one. Kevin Attard's going to join us, and I think we'll have him momentarily, and we'll talk about the amazing and hard to stop mare, now seven, Starship Jubilee. And I am curious, actually, because I'm going to have to ask Kevin this, because I thought she was heading, you know, to mommyhood, to being a broodmare. And when she went through, didn't she? I'm going to check this. Kevin Attard joins us. And Kevin, I was free associating a little bit, waiting. And I want to say that last November, wasn't she headed to the broodmare band? I wasn't sure that she was coming back as a 7-year-old.
Yeah, that was originally the idea. We contemplated sending her to the breeding shed, but then decided we were going to give her another shot in the Sunshine Millions and see how she performed and how she came out of the race. And if she continued to kind of have that will to win and she was obviously sound and healthy, that we would kind of take it race by race.
Well, and race by race has resulted in more stakes success, including Saturday, where on cue, when Javier Castellano asked her, she responded, and she, very mild upset of Sister Charlie, and her eighth graded stake win, originally going back into the Attard camp, a $16,000 claim, and the story just keeps writing chapter after chapter. Your first graded stake win in New York. Congratulations.
Correct. Yeah, that was. Obviously, would have liked to have been there, but due to COVID, I wasn't allowed to travel. But it was, it was really exciting watching her on TV and reading for her.
Some thoughts about going into this race and knowing that you got a horse like Sister Charlie that is actually on a kind of a par in a lot of ways, an older mare that coming back for her start of her 6-year-old season, it felt like a good spot in terms of catching her a little flat footed and you having a recency edge.
Yeah, no doubt. My filly kind of took a little longer to come around after we kind of gave her a little bit of refreshing after the Hillsburg in Tampa. And, my intention was actually to kind of start her off at Woodbine, but I wasn't happy with the way she had kind of been breathing and just wanted to give her a little bit more time. I would say probably the last three works, she kind of seemed to have that spark kind of in her eye again. And I was really pleased with the way she was working, and I figured, the Boston Spa looked like it was the most logical race. It was a mile of 16th, and I knew Sister Charlie was going to be there. Obviously, it might have been, a little shorter than her best. And like you said, she's a 6-year-old kind of coming off the bench. And, as they get older, some of them take a little longer to kind of round into form. Some of them lose a step or two. So I figured, if it was any time to kind of take her on, this would probably be the best spot for us. And it kind of worked out well.
As you've enjoyed all this, Kevin, what do you consider her best trip? And or how adaptable is she to, to move to different distances? Because, obviously when she won the E.P. Taylor in October, we talked after that, the mile and a quarter, and she's won, going as short as a mile as well. I mean, she seems very tractable in terms of adjusting to circumstance.
Yeah, definitely. She's very, she's very versatile, mare. I personally think probably a mile and eighth is probably her best distance. But she, you can cut her back to a mile and 16. You can cut her back to a mile. She's got enough early foot where she can get a mile. So a mile a quarter, I think, is pushing it. But she's won at that distance twice, including the E.P. Taylor, as you mentioned. So it's just it's so nice to have a horse that is as versatile as she is, tries as hard as she does, and is as tactable as she is. Because I think that's what her strength is. She can come off the pace, she can go on the lead if she needs. So I think that's where her strength lies.
Well, this has really become, and we talked about it, last fall, it's become one of those stories that is going to, go into racing lore. I mean, taking a filly for $17,000 and then winning a hatful of graded stakes and well over $1.5 million now in total earnings. And obviously she's got more opportunities as the rest of the year unfolds.
Yeah, we're definitely hoping there's more opportunities ahead, that's for sure. She's just a very underrated horse, I think, to this point, right? Hopefully that race on Saturday kind of gives her the respect that she does deserve. She's proven now she's one of the top fillies in mare turf fillies in North America, and we're excited, and hopefully come November we're at Keeneland with her.
Well, how do you envision getting there? And you know, she certainly between the spring of last year, after the Sunshine Millions, she ended up running seven times, six times after the Sunshine Millions, and so she does seem like a horse that that picks up momentum with with opportunity. You run her once or twice even between now and November?
Yeah, I would definitely think so. She actually, I think she does thrive off of racing, and she does seem to get better as the season progresses. Yeah. I think that's just because she gets races under her belt. She's a true competitor in that sense, and she loves to compete, and I think she just builds off of that momentum. So, ideally, I think in a perfect world, we do get at least two into her. Which I think is very possible, and we're just going to kind of see how she comes out of this race before we decide. Obviously, the Diana at Saratoga is a possibility. There are some possibilities here at Woodbine at home as well. So we'll see in the next few days, and we'll kind of let her decide when she's ready to roll.
Starship Jubilee, and another graded stake, and that's three straight in the United States at three different courses, too. She won the Suwannee River at Gulfstream, then won the Hillsboro, and now wins the Ballston Spa. And last year, she just missed in this. I mean, so it's kind of nice to come back. And she's one of these mares that has a tendency to run in the same kinds of opportunities. And why not? You're poaching. You're right there in TO, and so you're well within striking distance of a lot of different venues, and you seem to have picked them really well on a consistent basis.
Yeah, the Saratoga trip is pretty straightforward from Toronto, that's for sure. So it's nice, and it's just a matter of kind of putting her on a van and either kind of heading heading southeast or southwest, basically, right? So obviously with COVID this year makes it a little tougher for me to send people with her or myself. But we were in good hands on Saturday. Shug McGee was kind enough to allow her to kind of come to his barn, and his team and himself, took good care of her, and appreciate that very much.
It's funny you bring up Shug in this, and we've mentioned this a few different times during the situation over the summer, and it came up with George Weaver, George sending one of his to New Jersey, and Ken Sweezy handled Tom Amos sent No Parole, and Pat Kelly handled, and you had Shug. Explain to everybody what the financials, what the arrangements are, what a barn, the forwarding barn, gets when they do this.
Well, obviously I sent some money down for the crew, just to kind of pay them for their hard work and time that they put in, and it's more than. The financial aspect of it, I've kind of had horses here for Shug when he's kind of shipped them up to Woodbine in the past, and it's just nice to have somebody at a different location where you can kind of count on and trust and have peace of mind, right? So I think that's the key. So people need to get paid for their work, but there's a big trust factor that kind of goes in that you can't put a monetary value on.
Well, clearly in good hands, and has been in good hands from the start. And we talked about the claim, back last year, and it's really an amazing story. And it certainly when a horse is taken for 16, and it goes on to these kinds of successes, it's inspiring, Kevin, for smaller outfits, for people that that look at claiming races and have easily in a lot of cases the ability to take one for 10, 16, 20, but to turn one into this is amazing.
It definitely is amazing. It doesn't happen all the time, but it can happen, and it does kind of it allows the small guy to have the chance to dream and have the opportunity to kind of play and with sky's the limit. You know, sometimes you just kind of get the right horse at the right time, and it could be early in their career, and they're just starting to kind of figure things out. And, you know, I mean, not all of them start their careers off winning and kind of, you know, I mean, running and state caliber races. Some of them take a little longer to kind of mature and develop, and she's one of those fillies that it just seems like as the older she's gotten, the better she has.
Well, the story will continue for Starship Jubilee, and for you, this was just part of a tremendous weekend. Every time I looked up at Woodbine, you were winning races Saturday and Friday, and there was a horse that let's go back to last Saturday. I want to ask you about a horse that maybe some people have not seen, and this is a Bodemeister, a 3-year-old that Donato Lanny owns, and of course Donato at Hill and Dale, and he bought this one for himself for $50,000. His name is Clayton. That was a very nice performance.
Yeah, he's a special colt. We liked him right from the beginning. He breathed really well as a juvenile. The first time we ran him, he was very impressive, won very convincingly. So he's a Canadian bred. Obviously, we had sights on, you know, I mean, the Canadian Classic Queen's Plate. You know, it's the equivalent of the Kentucky Derby for Canadian bred, going a mile and a quarter. Obviously, with COVID this year, it's been postponed to September the 12th. So we're looking forward to obviously trying to get him towards that that date. And we're really excited. He ran an eye-catching performance last Saturday, going a mile 16 for the first time in his career, and he was pretty impressive. And he's come out of the race in great shape. So we're hoping he kind of just continues to progress, and hopefully we have a date in September with him.
Plate trial, maybe.
That'll be his next engagement, most likely, yeah. That's what we're shooting towards. That's August 15th, going a mile and eighth against the horses that are nominated to the Queen's Plate at the time. So seems like the most reasonable spot for him. So we're working towards that, and hopefully we'll have him ready in time, and he'll come up with another good performance.
Very nice. For those that didn't catch the name, it's Clayton. And of course, for those that traveled the St. Lawrence River on the New York side of the bridge, Clayton, New York, and you ever go to the Picton Islands at all?
No, never.
You should go to the Picton. Picton's really pretty. It's really nice through there. Tina and I got married in the Thousand Islands, so we love the. We love the channel and love going up there. And we've started to go to Clayton even more than Alex Bay. It's really an underappreciated vacation option for, you know, really anybody on either side of the border. Of course, right now, getting across the border is a nightmare, as you referenced. Talk about Saturday's wins as well. You know, you beat us with a Fleet Catherine. That was that was tough. I was, that race was part of the cross country pick five, Kevin, and nice performance by the filly.
Yeah, she's actually turning out to be a real nice filly. She's she's bred well. She's her family. The mare kind of has a filly by the name of Amalfi Coast that she's a half sister to. So we've always had high expectations on this filly. She won first time out, and her race on Saturday, she didn't, at the eighth pole, I didn't think she was going to win, but she found a way to win, and she's been pretty impressive. We're probably going to take a shot with her next in the Canadian Oaks, another restricted 3-year-old filly race for Canadian breds, going a mile and eighth, so it'll be her first time going around two turns, but she seems like the added distance shouldn't be an issue.
Nice. There was also the maiden breaker, too, we should mention, at a mile, Pacenza.
Yeah, she's turning out to be a nice little filly as well. We ran her first time out going 5.5. I thought she ran a decent race, closed some ground, was a little green. So we decided to stretch her out. She had some turf breeding to her. Took her to the turf as well, and she put it all together, ran a very game and gutsy race, a little bumping and grinding kind of coming down the lane, and she prevailed. So exciting to kind of see that, and she's obviously taking the right steps forward.
I should probably mention, too, you had the stake runner, Marvelo, as well, and go as one of the choices, and 260 wire to wire. I mentioned this earlier, Gary Barber and Mark Cassie taking it with Emma Jane Wilson, and Marvelo, though, you know, is quite nice. Both she and Owlet, and Owlet, you know, the two of them figured, right? This was a mild upset, more than mild, actually, 10-1.
Yeah, definitely. It looked like a two-horse race on paper, but it was an oddly run race. There looked like a lot of speed on paper, and it didn't really transpire. Emma did a great job kind of getting to the front with her filly and slowing down the pace. We had a kind of a wide trip. It was a disappointing effort, but I'm really high on my filly. I think she's a very nice filly, and we'll just kind of hit the drawing board again and look to regroup. And she's scheduled to run in the Canadian Oaks as well. So we'll hope we can kind of get all our I's and T's crossed and dotted, and kind of make sure she's as best prepared she can be for that date.
Two questions. Kevin Attard's with us. And, Kevin, I got questions about horses that you don't train. What's your take on Cheryl's Spike?
Amazing horse, actually. He seems like he's got a world of potential. He's won both his career starts in as easy a fashion as you could want a horse to win. So it's going to be exciting to watch him kind of develop. Ran a very fast time on Saturday, 143 and change, under a hand ride. So he's obviously run on turf and on synthetic. Looks like he'll run on anything, and it seems like he's got a great future ahead of him.
Well, and I also am going to ask you about your cousin's horse, Jamie. That Red Hierarchy, that's going to be a serious horse.
Definitely, yeah. He's been pretty impressive in both of his starts as well. He's fast. He seems like he can rate a bit. It'll be interesting to see what Jamie does with him next. Obviously, he's a Canadian bred, so I'm not sure what they're thinking, but he's definitely an exciting horse, and I'm sure Jamie's excited to have him in the barn, and I wish him all the luck in the world.
Well, and from a difficult post too, and Justin Stein aboard, and that was also part. That was after you had won with a Fleet Catherine, and it was the fourth leg of the cross country pick five. So it was kind of tuning in, and he was under pressure from the bell, and tended the pace, takes over, is being chased, and then just ran away from them. It's unbelievable. And of course, this is really an interesting, Mr. Walton, Howard Walton, Norseman Racing, and this is one of those proverbial homebreds, because Signature Red was his horse and was a very nice horse in his own right, and he bred Red Hierarchy. That's one people need to keep an eye on. In the meantime, Kevin, for you, really a good meet going at Woodbine, and things seem to have settled in, to a really nice beat up there.
Yeah, we're happy the way things are kind of going right now. We're hoping to pick up a little bit of momentum now, and we've got a lot of younger horses that are kind of getting ready. So, we're hoping going into the fall, some of those younger horses will kind of get to the races, and we'll see maybe some exciting young ones develop, and hopefully they turn into good three-year-olds for the next season.
Kevin Attard joining us, and obviously talking about way more than just the win by Starship Jubilee, and just everywhere I've been watching the last, a couple of weeks, Kevin's been hitting on all cylinders. You can follow Kevin at Kevin_Attard. And Kevin, continued success. And don't know if we'll be able to see you for the Diana either in person, but clearly we'll look forward to whatever's next for Starship and the rest of the barn. And we'll maybe just wait to see you at Keeneland for Breeders' Cup week.
Yeah, we're hoping these restrictions will get lifted and we'll be able to kind of travel. It'll be nice, and but we'll take it one step at a time. Obviously, she didn't need me there last weekend, so I'm pretty confident if we need to go back to the Diana, she'll be all right without us.
Kevin Attard, everybody, Starship Jubilee, and much, much more. Let's take a top-of-the-hour break, and when we come back, Rich Migliori. I got a bunch of things to talk about with Rich and get his review, his first weekend up broadcasting as part of the Fox Saratoga Live show. Hour 2 at the races, back after this.
Latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
Developed by Horsemen, Horsebills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving, environment-friendly, paperless revolution of how equine industries bill and receive payments. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for each horse, whose owners can pay through the same website with just one click. Say goodbye to stacks of invoices, handwritten checks, and postage costs. Easy accounting for all parties with the highest online security measures. Get started free at Horsebills.com. Simply register with your name and email address. Free to sign up. No subscription fees to vendors until the first invoice is sent. For owners, you get a free account, comprehensive dashboard with information on all horses owned and billing records, ACH and credit card payment options. For vendors, generate invoices efficiently and receive payments quickly from both owners and other vendors. Syndicate and partnership managers get flexible billing and payment options to both vendors and syndicate members. For more info, call 888-938-4643, 888-938-4643, or log on to horsebills.com. That's horsebills.com.
Get started in Kentucky. Over $8 million in additional purse money is available at the 5 Kentucky Tracks for Horses eligible for the Kentucky Thoroughbred Development Fund. Kentucky is a good place to race your Kentucky bred. Come home to Kentucky and make a start.
DRF Sports Form Digital Edition, your ultimate weekly betting guide. Published by Daily Racing Form, DRF Sports Form delivers all of the analysis and insight you need for every NFL game and more than 40 college football matchups. Beat the spread with powerful trends and sharp angles. Tap into best bets, expert picks, parlay winners, and more. All for just $4.99 per issue. Get this week's edition free. Visit drf.com/sportsform. Enter code DRF Sports.
Of Arizona Racetrack Industry Program can prepare you for an exciting career in racing. Turn your passion into a paycheck. Nearly 90% of our students are employed in the racing industry immediately upon graduation. What career track are you on? The University of Arizona Racetrack Industry Program. Enroll today and get on track for success. For scholarship opportunities and more, check out our website at ua-rtip.org.
Why is accreditation important in aftercare? The Thoroughbred Aftercare Alliance's standard of accreditation and grant process provide donors with confidence that their contributions are allocated in the most effective manner. TAA accreditation is only awarded after a complete review of an organization. Aftercare cannot be an afterthought for the industry. To learn more or support the TAA's mission, visit thoroughbredaftercare.org.
Sirius